Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Asia Pacific markets trading mixed this morning as investors evaluate movements in the currency markets and the latest corporate news. Joining me to break down all the market action, I'm Michelle Martin. By the way, I've never been more grateful to work in what I call a fridge, given temperatures out there. And I am thrilled to welcome back to the fridge Big Daddy himself, not my daddy, but somebody's daddy. Ryan Wong, how are
you? Yes, second time daddy, because I've been away for paternity leave for a good, what has it been, 4, 5?
It feels like 2 years.
It's been a long time. And of course, coming back on the first day, also a bit of an adjustment. So I am trying to get back up to speed again. A lot of emails are clear. But otherwise, I'm glad I made it to work, because it's been tough waking up in the morning with the change in, I guess, time zones.
Well, welcome back, Ryan. You would
definitely miss.
We miss all your practical jokes.
So much has happened, I imagine, in the past few weeks.
So much has happened. We're going to drag you out of bed every day to make sure you get to work. For sure. New alarm clock coming your way, my friend. We begin this morning with a big latte and the world of Starbucks, fast food, and consumer stocks. And I have to say, the headlines this morning are not good. On the eve of Labor Day, Starbucks reported weaker than expected earnings. In fact, the numbers were so bad. CNBC's Jim Cramer said he was stunned by the coffee chain's terrible quarter. So fewer people are visiting Starbucks, which is leading to a drop in same-store sales. The coffee giant netted about $770 million US dollars between Jan and March. This led to a big sell-off in Starbucks shares overnight. The stock closed down more than 15%. Now, not only that, Starbucks' forecast for the rest of the year is rather sobering as well. What's the latest here?
Yeah, they need a pick-me-up or a comeback cappuccino. So it is not looking good, because I think a lot of folks are starting to feel more conscious about what they're spending on. And if you've been to Starbucks, you know their drinks cost more than a lot of other places. You know, you want to have a good coffee, but it comes at a price. So that is the price that they are starting to, I guess, feel the pinch at those levels. So you've got what's being dubbed casual customers starting to turn away from the likes of Starbucks. And that accounts for, I suppose, a dip in those sales. And to some degree, there's been some news about boycotts of the Starbucks brand because of what's happening in the Middle East. So maybe that could be a factor as well. So all in, people are trying to figure out, is this going to be a sustainable, or is a sustained drop in the Starbucks business? Is this going to last for more than one quarter? So that's what's playing out for Starbucks, missing on their latest quarter, slashing their 2024 guidance. Foot traffic is down. So we'll have to see if this continues for the next quarter.
Nearly a dozen Wall Street analysts figuring all that out as well. They've either slashed their target price or downgraded Starbucks after its disappointing quarterly report. Starbucks CEO Laxman Narishman is only about a year into the job. Analysts say the honeymoon period definitely over. Narasimhan isn't giving up, though. What is his strategy exactly for luring consumers back to Starbucks?
Yeah, I think with Starbucks, there's always the idea that, you know, if you introduce something new, then folks will come back again. So I imagine new menu items will be on the table. And of course, to some extent, cost cutting as well. So there is an urgency for them to get the performance up again. So that's going to be part of the game plan, just writing the business to be more efficient in some sense. And I think a lot of companies are starting to be more conscious about the levels of efficiency in the operations.
Yeah, it always boils down to productivity. Starbucks is not the only F&B chain to be facing difficulties. McDonald's and KFC's parent company, Yum, are also facing a pullback. Tell us more.
Yeah, so it's not just Starbucks. It's playing out across the board for some of these familiar brands. And it's, I think, a reflection how some consumers are starting to gravitate to other choices, maybe more value choices. So that's going to be something to look out for. And if you look at how that's been playing out for the likes of Starbucks, shares are already down quite a lot on those expectations that the earnings in the next few quarters will not be so encouraging. You've got also Pizza Hut and KFC reporting shrinking same-store sales. So this looks like consumers are cutting back, looking for better value elsewhere. Maybe they are going more grocery shopping, cooking their own food, packing their own sandwiches. So that's, I suppose, part of the equation. And also part of the equation is how there's been some bad weather in the US at least, keeping people at home, not going out as much. So these retail stores are not seeing the same levels of foot traffic. Mm-hmm. Competition as well for a smaller pool of consumers will also be not great news for the bottom line. So margins are under pressure. So all in, it's been a perfect storm of bad reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Shares of Yum fell 4% overnight. McDonald's managed to chalk up a gain, closing up 0.5%. All right, let's turn to AI and chip makers now. Now, the AI buzz has given a lot of juice to markets this year. But now analysts are looking for evidence that investments in AI are already reaping rewards. AMD and Supermicro have both reported earnings and results are mixed. Supermicro missed its quarterly revenue estimate, but it is raising its full-year revenue forecast. AMD's numbers are disappointing investors as well. And this is leading some analysts to say NVIDIA is the sector's only hope. What's the latest here?
Yeah, if you've been following the AI frenzy, some of these names have been going on a bit of a ride. The likes of AMD, Supermicro, NVIDIA. But so far, AMD and Supermicro have disappointed expectations. Remember, it's important to reinforce the word expectations because they actually haven't been doing too badly. So if you look at AMD, for example, they actually raised their forecast for revenue, but not as high as what people were hoping for. So AMD CEO Lisa Su says that its product, the MI300, has become the fastest ramping product in its history, passing $1 billion in total sales. So it's raising its forecast to $4 billion for sales, up from $3.5 billion. But you have analysts, they were earlier thinking, hey, AI is going to be the big thing for the likes of AMD, for example. And they threw up even higher numbers before Lisa Su spoke. So those numbers were to the tune of 5 to 6 billion above the 4 billion that eventually came out. So some tempering of expectations there. So I think a bit of disappointment on that front. And then if you look at Supermicro, they also have a bit of a missing of expectations of that sort. So they reported third quarter revenue at $3.85 billion. That is up 200%. But expectations were much higher at $3.95 billion. The company also talked about huge demand for its servers, taking, of course, advantage of the AI computing needs. But again, people are hoping for much more. So disappointment on expectations. So now it falls down to NVIDIA to carry the weight of expectations.
Let's look at what those disappointing expectations meant for the stock. Shares of Supermicro tumbled 14% overnight. AMD closed down 9%. One stock that's doing a little better is Qualcomm. It is up 4% in after-hours trade on the back of better-than-expected revenue forecasts. Let's take a step back. Look at the chip-making sector, Ryan. It's historically been vulnerable to these boom and bust cycles, but it seems kind of early to think that it's already bust time. What is your take on the sector?
Yeah, you mentioned Qualcomm, and they had a pretty encouraging outlook for what's to come. And they talk about how the demand for high-end premium-tier smartphones is on the up. So that means potentially AI-powered phones, which will require AI chips. And that's good news for chip makers. So I am optimistic on that front that we will see more AI products when you get all these events, the Mobile World Congress, the likes of CES, the new TVs that are to come. People will try to find a way to plug in AI because it's what customers want. So whether it works or not is another story, but I think the chips will find itself into devices. And I am looking forward to seeing how that's going to mean new features for the likes of you and me. Will we get smarter phones? Not just a smartphone, but a smarter phone. So I am very excited about what's to come.
For sure, me too. I watched Blade Runner yesterday and I said, this is absolutely the future. Blade Runner 2049. It's all about chips. And I have to say that you have to read this book as well, Chip War, The Fight for the World's Most Critical Technology. That is just essential reading for a background of an understanding of the chip wars moving forward. From consumer-facing stocks and AI, I'm going to zoom out. Let's take a look at factors influencing broader markets. And of course, we have to talk about interest rates and the U.S. Federal Reserve. The Fed has just concluded a two-day meeting, and it's clear that interest rates are not moving in the direction that the Fed would like, at least not fast enough. What did you take from Jay Powell's comments this morning?
Yeah, pretty much the same tune he's been singing for quite some time. He is saying, hey, we need more data. That is pretty much the crux of it. But the takeaways here is how he has addressed some of the market expectations. So going into the meeting, we had the GDP data for the US last week talking about stagflation. People worried about the economy. But according to his outlook, Jerome Powell seems to be quite optimistic about where the US economy is going. The other thing is people were worried about inflation. And to that extent, Jerome Powell says, hey, he's not too worried enough to have to hike rates. So on that front, he took rate hiking off the table. So that gave a bit of reprieve to investors that maybe the inflation problem is not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's back to rate cuts again. And I think markets are starting to be more measured in that sense, looking for two rate cuts. You might remember when we started the year, we were looking at six. So now with how inflation has played out and what Jerome Powell has said, no, things are going well, but not maybe fast enough, but it is going in the right direction. Rate cuts are still going to be on the table, but maybe towards the end of the year. So that's the latest. And in turn, markets were pricing in maybe more bad news, but they didn't get it. So in that sense, markets were largely flat. We did see a bit of rise in the Dow, but otherwise, the earlier gains started to give way to a bit of a, I suppose, profit-taking.
Yeah, initially the markets jumped on Powell's remarks. As he indicated, the Fed is unlikely to raise rates. But by the session's close, stocks had largely given back their gains. So NASDAQ and S&P 500 finished down 0.33%. Dow, it managed to finish in the positive territory, the Dow up 0.25%. High U.S. interest rates have really been putting pressure on currencies across the globe, leading to a strong dollar and weakness in other currencies. Over the past couple of days, there's been volatility and quite a surge in the Japanese yen, leading up to speculation that Japan's central bank is intervening in the markets. Tell us more.
Yeah, this is another story that has been on repeat quite a bit, is the BOJ intervening, right? Mm-hmm. At every key level, we talk about how the BOJ might intervene. Is this the line of sand that maybe they will not tolerate the yen getting weak enough?
Yep.
We talk about it at 150 and then 151,
160,
155. Well, it broke to a 34-year low.
Yeah.
This is where it is right now. How, I suppose, weak or cheap the yen is, depending on where you're looking at it. And I think that's one reason why we've been seeing such a huge crowd going to Japan. They are talking about over-tourism in many parts there right
really
now.
Really crowded. Yeah.
Very crowded. So the yen not doing any favors for that part of the equation. And maybe the BOJ is thinking maybe it's time. And this is now making the rounds again that the Japanese authorities are perhaps going to intervene for a second time this week to support the currency. So that report has helped to lift the yen. So getting stronger by about 3% against the dollar, now at around 153 from around 157 earlier. So that is going to be closely watched, and especially so as we come off the back of the FOMC meeting as the traders digest the latest comments from Fed Chair Jerome Powell.
All right, time for corporate news. So we do it up or down style. Let's move away from yen bingo to up or down for Tesla.
All right, Tesla is going to be a down for me. And this comes as we get news that it is cutting jobs. Yes, Tesla is cutting jobs as well. And this is the, I would say, important division. It's the supercharger division. And it's important because EVs need a place to charge.
Mm-hmm.
And Tesla has been leading the so-called charge when it comes to setting up these kiosks or charging points. You need to have these points around, otherwise folks like you and me will think twice. Where am I going to charge my car? Even though I have an EV, I need a place to charge it. So if you don't have enough charging points, people are not going to buy EVs. And it is almost a vicious cycle, right? People will not buy EVs, and then it leads to them cutting back. And in recent times, Tesla has been under pressure because people have not been buying EVs. And that's one reason why they're cutting jobs. So it is seeing competition with more EV players. And to some extent, the initial wave of EV buyers has dried up. So a lot of these car makers are now starting to question, should they start to cut back on their production of EVs? Some of them are gravitating back towards hybrids to kind of tide over this tough period, I suppose lack of demand. Mm-hmm. So Tesla and other EV makers are going to be having to face a lot of tough questions. Should they start to cut back on production of EVs? Now, what is this going to mean if you are relying on the Tesla supercharging network? If you're another brand, are you going to come up with your own charging point to support your own sales? Would this mean a more fragmented supercharging network? So you've got all these questions starting to come into the industry. You know, what is going to be the future of EVs and EV charging networks?
Yeah, so this is definitely raising questions of the future of expansion. These hundreds of layoffs, Tesla shutting down the entire EV charging team, 500 employees have been retrenched. Definitely a down from me as well. And potentially a down for the US transition to EVs, as a number of other companies have made deals to rely on Tesla's charging network. How's this going to affect them? Let's look at Google.
Yep, Google is pretty much going in the same tune of Tesla, cutting jobs. And this is hundreds of what's dubbed core employees, which includes key teams and engineering talent. The interesting thing here is they are hiring in Mexico and India. So they are cutting jobs. Some places, I imagine, would be more expensive and getting more cost efficiencies elsewhere. And this is Google. And if Google is doing it, you might have to ask what other tech companies start to follow suit and find cheaper talent elsewhere.
Absolutely. And you'll remember on Your Money, we talked about Mexico benefiting from such moves last year. This is why you need to listen to Your Money. All right. So Google down for me as well. I think the move to look at jobs shifting to Mexico and India as pools of talent might save on costs, but I'm going to give Google a down for the move. Retrenching at least 200 employees from their core teams, Google is. All right. Let's look at the cruise operator Viking.
All right, Viking is, I suppose, sailing high because on its IPO day one, it opened at above its IPO price. IPO price was $24. It opened slightly above that, I believe, at around $25, $26. So all in, Viking is having a pretty good day in the markets.
Indeed, the cruise liner went public in New York overnight. It looks like the U.S. biggest IPO of the year, valued at more than $10 billion. Viking shares jumped 9%. Now, think about it in context. Just a couple of years ago, people were dumping their, you know, during COVID, remember, people were dumping their cruise liner shares left and right. So no longer. Apparently, it looks like things are looking up for Viking and the cruise line industry in general, right?
All about timing, right? So it's coming in at a good time, so much so it's become the biggest U.S. stock market debut of 2024. You know, everyone's flocking to cruises right now, a bit of revenge travel in the mix.
I'd like to retire on a cruise.
That is the dream. People, you know, serving you all hours of the day.
And life of luxury.
Entertainment at your doorstep.
You just cannot outlive the amount that you put into these cruises, that's all.
Who needs an old folks home? Just live on a cruise.
It is a dream. All right, let's look at SIA.
All right, SIA, also about travel, but some bad news. It's bad weather. Severe thunderstorms in some Chinese cities means SIA and Scoot flights between Singapore and China have to be delayed. So that's going to mean a grounding of a number of flights, and I think in time to come it might hit some of their operations. So it's going to be a big question how much impact they will see when the quarterly earnings come out, you know, with China quite a big part of the business. So this is affecting some of the cities like Hunan, Jiangxi, Zhejiang, Fujian, Guangxi and Guangdong. So bad weather there means some of the flights will be at risk of being cancelled.
Yeah. All right. He always gives us a brain workout. Thank you so much, Ryan. Who do you think is going to out-nap each other, you or baby, today?
It's going to be a close one.
Ryan Wong there. I'm Michelle Martin. Stay with us.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.